A 2014 study by the United Nations Population Fund and International Center for Research on Women shows that 6 out of 10 men in India justified violence against women. But worrying, that's not all. 70% of married women there justify gender-based violence. The fact that domestic violence is considered acceptable is why women in India are so vulnerable to it.
Hi, this is Karin Weiss and welcome to the Medicus Mundi Switzerland Health for All podcast. And today we talk with Kushbu from Delhi in India. She has a remarkable life journey behind her where she experienced violence, depression and injustice. She has completed her education in psychology and in human rights. We will not only hear about her hero journey, but also what is needed from a young person's perspective to reach young people to receive comprehensive sexuality education and about the right to be informed about love, sex and relationships. Hi Kushbu, I'm so honored to have you on this podcast today. Welcome to this episode.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you so much. Always lovely to come on board on these podcasts or short videos, which essentially would make a difference in the world. So yeah, honor is all mine.
You grew up in Delhi as a firstborn and you lived the first 3 years with your parents. As far as I know, a lot of things happened when you were a child. Do you remember these years?
Well, I do. Those were pretty tough years. Essentially, I say this because not only I remember, but those are the years which has shaped me in a person that I am today. Whether they are my flaws or they are my strengths, it was those years that has shaped me. So yeah, tough journey. Yes, I lived with my parents for first 3 years. I lived for a couple of years with my mother's parents, then lost my parents when I was 10 years old.
What happened exactly to your mother?
There was a lot of violence. She was pregnant. She was 9 months pregnant and my father and mother had a fight. I was at my grandparents' house. I was not there. They had a fight and some neighbor called us and we had reached there and they were full violence. There was a lot of violence that had already happened and we rushed my mother to the hospital, but she couldn't survive.
Why is there so much silence in the community or even in the society when it comes to violence?
It's quite funny how in India people usually see and perceive things, and it's quite often when people use this term, women is not the women's best friend. So I see a lot, and I've seen this in the family, and I've seen this in other families, and I've seen this with people I've interacted, that a lot of women bring other women down. There are not a lot of women who actually would push you to become a better person. There are people like that, but mostly women are put in a patriarchal society or in a patriarchal household, so much so that they start teaching their daughters, they start teaching their sisters, they themselves become that person who's now a part of patriarchy essentially. So they start teaching patriarchy to their next generation, and then that goes on, that cycle, that chain is not breaking. And hence it's becoming difficult and difficult being modern, being independent, being working young women. Still, we are emotionally weak. We are too much dependent on our families. And that is a sign of somebody teaching us patriarchy since the day we are born.
Is this what happened to your mother?
This did. Yes, it did. She couldn't leave her partner. She couldn't leave her husband because it was a love marriage. She couldn't leave him knowing that he was violent and abusive because she went rogue and she went rogue against her parents. So for her, that choice was either to face abuse and violence from her husband or just listen to the world on the other side, from her relatives to everybody and anybody, that look, you made a mistake. Look, this was your mistake. You are bearing the brunt of it. So she chose to live in a violent household rather than listening or going through trauma of somebody just taunting you all day.
How did it make you feel?
I think I till today, I do not think my mother made right choices. And I proudly say it. I do understand her position in life. I do understand that probably she was going through the brunt, and hence I say this. But I think she could have made better choices. She was independent. She was taking care of my father's household. She was the earning member. She just needed to control her emotions and step out of that house. And she could have easily taken care of herself and her daughter, which is me.
To continue your story, how did you experience being a teenager?
I had a very, very sad and a lonely teenage and adolescent years. I really do miss the time. I wish I could live like other teenage children or adolescent girls. I was put in a boarding school soon after my mom passed away.
And that was the moment when they decided to send you to a boarding school.
My grandparents just thought it would be better for me to get away from the places that I was going to. They really thought that it would be better for me to get away from all this negativity. And they actually did not believe that they could take care of me. They thought, as grandparents, they are now old and they will not be able to help me study or take care of me on daily basis. So they just decided that it would be better. I wasn't asked. I would say I wasn't told or asked both. I was definitely convinced that it would be for a year or two.
And what gave you the strength to go through this boarding school experience?
I think I didn't have a choice, Karen. I didn't have a choice. Again, as I said, nobody asked me or nobody told me. I didn't have a choice. I was just told, okay, this is the decision that we are making. All happened so fast. My mom died. She was 9 months pregnant. So essentially, I lost a sibling because of my father and mother's equation. My father left. So for me, I lost my family in one day. And I was not in a frame of mind after 15 days to decide what boarding school is or to ask the right questions or not. The situation came to me. I didn't go to the situation. So it just happened to me. All of it was just happening to me. I do not remember deciding anything apart from in my young days who to call on my birthday party. I think that was the decision that I was taking. But rather than that, all of it just happened to me.
I remember your story that you told me that you had a boyfriend at that time who helped you a lot, or that his classmates helped you find a boyfriend. What was the story about that?
This is also, this was class 7. I remember I was put in a boarding school in class 6. There was a lot of peer pressure of getting a boyfriend. So there were 3 other girls. We were in the same standard. And there were 4 boys in the boys' wing, and everybody was just dating here and there. And I was the only person who was left in that group. So all the seniors were like, no, you should start dating, and you should, this guy likes you and this person likes you and this and that whole story, build ups, all of that. And again, I had no choice because I did not have anybody to ask what this actually means. I just knew that if you are not listening to your seniors, you might be ragged. So to save myself from that ragging, I just gave in. The good part about that sort of relationship or having that boyfriend, and I was probably lucky because we behaved as friends rather than behaving like people in relationship. This was the first time somebody was asking questions about me. So I opened up and I told what I was feeling. And that's how I came out of depression that I was going through.
So that was a changing moment in your life.
Yes, more than 10 years. But yeah, I'm still in touch with that person. I thank him immensely. I've always told everybody that if it was not that situation, probably I would have not come out of depression.
Can I ask you a bit more about these teenage years? How did it make you feel when all the things have started to change within your body, within your psychological mind, everything started to change? How did it make you feel?
I felt a lot of pressure. I felt that this is not what I'm supposed to deal with. This is not how other kids are dealing with these situations. And I should not be put in the forefront of it and say, okay, this is hit and try. I should have known. Because the first time, as you're asking me, that what if I had to say at 27, now I'm 27. And if I have to say that what are the clear things that I remember, which did not work well for me. One would be the time, it is as simple as the first time I got my periods. I rolled down the stairs because I saw the blood. I did not know the word periods. I remember the nurse asking me, the nurse from my boarding school asking me, why didn't you tell me that where you were bleeding from? I told her, I do not know. And she was like, why didn't you tell me you're getting periods? I was like, I do not know what periods are. So, you know, how do I explain something that I have no clue exists? It did not exist in my life. And it was, it's been a scar. And I still, when I have to think about that moment, I just think my mother should have been there. My aunt should have told me. My grandmother should have told me. My friend should have told me. Somebody should have told me.
And why didn't they tell you?
My aunt was my aunt and not my mother. My grandmother was my grandmother and she was not my mother. My warden was not my mother. My friends were not my mother. My roommates were not my mother. And my mother was absent. Typically how the world works is the boys will have the conversation with fathers and the girls would have these conversations with their mother. Or rather opposite, mothers would have the conversation with daughters and fathers would have the conversation with son. But again, what if somebody's parents are absent? Or even if they're not absent, they themselves do not have that information. Or they themselves probably have the information, but they do not know how to explain it. Or they explain wrong. For example, my aunt always thought that she had periods for 2 to 3 days. And she thought that her daughters would also have periods for 2 to 3 days. But that's not right. I mean, in the best of interest also, with best of intentions also, you could give wrong information or you can pass wrong messaging, which could affect this person's life for years and years and years. It could taint them. And I just feel if I had to go back, this is one part I would not want to deal with again. I mean, it was harder for me to kind of, when you're going through, I was going through losing my family, plus all of these new things were the add-ons, which would have easily been avoided.
And today, are women or young girls still uninformed?
Of course. And it's not only the rural settings, it is also in urban settings that people are. They used to be uninformed. Now they are misinformed.
What about are they misinformed?
I think how people are processing the information nowadays and the channels through which they're getting these information are not verified. You do not know. They are not going to doctors to get these information. A person wants to know about what sex is, what pregnancy is, what abortion is. They are not going to a doctor. They're going and searching sex on Google. And when they do search sex on Google, the first 3, 4, 5, 10 slots that they see are relating to a porn site. And even if it's not a porn site, it would be a site which is selling sex toys and advertising porn. It would be a dating site, but also advertising some messaging which are not right. You get the girl of your choice. That's not the right messaging. I mean, with best of your intention, that is not the right messaging. No, you need to involve the conversation around consent in it. You need to make the person understand that it's not a dreamland. There's no reality check. The people are shown this whole dreamland, which is not reality. The perfect body, perfect hair, perfect height, perfect education. Everything is not as perfect as you see.
Who would be the right person to teach young people about comprehensive sexuality education?
Internet. Everybody is going, even if they do not have internet on their phones or they do not have laptops or Wi-Fi, they're going to cyber cafes. They're looking at YouTube videos. They're searching for these sort of information. So that is the best place. In that, there is only one essence that we need to now inform people is that, yes, internet is a good source. You need to use that to get information, but just check the verified sources. Do not go on a porn site and check out and understand what sex is. You have better sources and you can read about it. You can ask questions about it. These conversations, I'm glad that these conversations have started happening with young people now. Before this, it was only that people used to talk about sex after 18 years old. Like when you're 18, mothers or parents would have these conversations with their kids and say, once you're 18, you're too young to understand. You're too young to make a boyfriend. Once you pass class 12, then you can make a boyfriend. Now, I think that has gone away. That curtain has been, drawn out. So I think what's left of it is just to tell people, hey, this is a verified source. Go here. Check out the information. I think the schools can do it. I think schools can hold these workshops with these verified sources. And that would be a great way.
What does comprehensive sexuality education mean to you?
For me, comprehensive sexuality education means somebody who has the experience and the information, the right information about your body, about changes that you will see in your life, in terms of feelings, in terms of hormones, in terms of biology, in terms of perspective. I think these are avoidable stresses in life. So if somebody can help me avoid these stressors, I think life would be a little bit easier. It is really tough. If I know what periods are, I can probably give 110% to my exams rather than worrying about what suddenly happened. So knowledge and complete knowledge is a very, very powerful tool. If I have the information from beforehand, I can plan my life better. I can understand things better. I can make informed choices. I would be much more aware about myself than I would be when I do not know what's going to happen next. And as I said, these are avoidable stressors. And I also think that when we talk about CSC, I think it should be independent. This information should be independent of people, independent of family members, independent of the school you are going to, independent of the college you're going to, independent of the friends that you have. It should be the information which should go as is to everybody, not with biases.
Who would be the ideal person to do that?
As I said, internet and verified sources. And very recently, we are seeing this one verified source that I definitely can talk about. And yes, I talk about it. And a lot of my young cousins are using it too. It's called Teen Book. And it's amazing because it's quirky. You can ask questions. Parents can ask questions. Kids can ask questions. It's free of cost. It's verified. And yes, you can talk about anything. You can ask questions about anything there. You can ask questions around gender, sexuality, menstruation, love, crushes, peer pressure, education, depression. You need help find a doctor, probably. You need a network. You need to talk about your depression. You want to talk about a recent breakup. You can talk about anything.
And then you get real-time answers, or how does it work?
Yes, you get your answers within 24 hours. And it's young. It's young. It's a young platform. You can't access porn on Instagram. You can access porn sites or porn videos on Facebook. You can access Teen Book. You can access Teen Book for all sort of information by email, by Instagram, by Facebook, on YouTube. And where are young people these days? I see my cousins doing their homework on Instagram. I mean, we have reached there. I think we have reached that. They're discussing question papers on Instagram. That what do they have to study in the next 1 hour? So if young people can do their homework on Instagram, they can access this quirky information there. And it's fun when you get the right sort of information and your head is clear and you don't have any more doubts. I think you'll be able to enjoy your life much more.
So you grew up with a lot of stereotypes and harmful gender norms and cultural values. Your father was abusive, your mother stayed with him because she had nowhere to go, and you were also exposed to a lot of physical and verbal abuse. What gave you the strength to get out of it and heal your past and being so empowered today?
Karen, as I told you that I do not fear in telling my story, and I would not fear in accepting that I'm not healed. It is tough. Healing is a long, long process. And I wouldn't say that a person would always heal from these situations. If they're lucky and if they have a village and a community that is helpful and that is supportive, yes, there is a chance that you will heal. But there's a big chance that you won't. The reason why I am able to do what I am able to do today, the reason why I can sit and talk to you about all of this without dropping a tear, is that I was put into a situation where I had just two choices. Either I can survive it, or either I will lose it. Now, with losing it in my situation, I always thought if I go into depression, which I was, if I had not come out of the depression, or if I had not fought through that situation, I would be dependent on somebody. And for me to be dependent on somebody, that somebody needed to exist. But knowing that I do not have anybody where I can depend on, who I can depend on, I think there was only one way to go. That was to fight it.
still ask you one more question. Where do you see the opportunities and possibilities to change these harmful norms and values which are so deeply ingrained in the Indian culture?
I ask this question every day to myself, because I have a long legacy or the family behind me which have so many patriarchal norms that I haven't been able to break them as of now. But I think what I have been able to do is that I have convinced them to at least listen to the other side. What I usually see in patriarchal families, in a setup where a lot of patriarchy is there, that there is only one-way communication. We are older people. We are the head of the house. We are the earning person. I'm the person in power, so you will listen to me. I think I at least have been able to make that shift largely in my family and my peer and the community I interact with. I've just convinced them to start listening. Look, I will listen to you, and it's, of course, you're going to make the choice and it's your decision at the end of the day. But just listen. So I think with every time you listen, probably they'll be able to shift their perspective 1% or 0.5%. But it's a long journey.
If you had all the means and all the money, what would you do for young people in the generations to come?
Launch a game in 6 months.
Thank you so much for sharing your remarkable story with us. I wish you a lot of success and strength to lifting more taboos around sexuality, love, and relationships.
Thank you, Karen. It was really, really wonderful. And as a closing note, I would just say the adventure that I'm going to start right now is called What the Fuzz. So yes, there's no big fuss around all of these issues. We just need to talk about these things openly and just check out verified sources. That is it. And there is no big fuss about it. There should not be any taboo around it, and there is no fuss around it.
This was the Medicus Mundi Switzerland Health for All podcast with Karin Weiss. You can listen to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on our website. To spread the message, please leave a comment on our website, share, and like it. This was the last episode within this series. However, stay tuned. The next series with a new theme is round the corner.